This is The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. I'm Maiken Scott. Prisons have a lot of medical issues to deal with. Inmates are more likely than the general public to have chronic health problems, mental illnesses, to be HIV positive or addicted to drugs. And there's another creeping concern. Female inmates tend to put on a lot of weight. Eating means comfort, it passes the time, and exercise options can be limited. Tanya English visited one Philadelphia facility that's trying to offer alternatives.
To get to the gym at Riverside Correctional Facility, you pass through a metal detector, two heavy doors, and then head down the hall. There's a basketball court, like the ones you'd see at any high school, except there's a friendly and beefy corrections officer on guard near the three-point line. 16 stationary bikes are set up in a half circle in the corner.
All right, we're going to do a couple of five-second sprints, okay? If you can. If you're still learning, take it easy.
One or two inmates are struggling, but on bike number two, Lakeisha Montgomery is pedaling fast and singing loud.
Let's go. 10, 9, 8.
Her hair is braided back into cornrows. She has a sprinkle of freckles across her nose and high cholesterol.
I didn't think that I would be able to keep up because I'm not the skinniest thing in the bunch, but...
But she is keeping up. Montgomery has two teenagers and a toddler back at home. Between her job and her kids, she says she never worked out. Now Montgomery spends time in the prison yard almost every day, but doesn't get any exercise there either.
Well, the outside is not a real outside. It's like a little mini garage, four walls, you know. They have a basketball court there, but I don't play basketball. It's a lot of people that come out, so you don't have room to really jog or walk around. It's just like you sit out just to get some air, you know.
She's been at Riverside for 4 months. First time, last time, she says. And meantime, spin class is something to do.
Keep away frustration, you know, being locked up. It helps you get through.
In 2011, biking advocates from the nonprofit group Gearing Up persuaded prison officials to let them bring in bikes to teach indoor cycling. Founder Kristen Gavin says before, she had mentored ex-offenders out in the community.
And over, I had conversations with women who were saying, you know, while I was incarcerated, I put on 60 pounds. I put on 70 pounds. I'm like, how long were you in prison for? 6 months.
Gearing Up is working with researchers at Temple University to track the women's weight, body image, and sense of connectedness. It's early, but they've already found improvements in at least one measure of heart health. Gavin says at first, women come to class because they want to stop gaining weight. Then they find other reasons to keep coming back.
You know, I could speak to myself. If I weren't given the opportunity to be physically active, I'd probably go a little crazy. I probably wouldn't be able to manage my emotions, my temper, my anger. I think anger management is a huge issue for a lot of women who are in the prison. They've been victims of trauma and abuse.
And of course, some of them have hurt other people. Exercise is a way to release all sorts of emotions.
We're almost there. I see you, Jean.
Erica Tibbetts from Gearing Up is leading the class. She has short red hair, and the swoop of her bangs is wet with sweat. Tibbetts is in bike shorts. Everyone else has on prison blues, long navy pants, and a white t-shirt.
The worst problem seems to be women don't have good sports bras in here.
9, 8, 7, 6.
No one has a water bottle either, and exercise gear isn't allowed. Tibbetts says women come to class anyway and work with what they have. Jean, on bike 10, for example, wrapped a long piece of scratchy brown paper towel around her head to make a sweatband. Climb up on a bike and there's a sense of freedom, even if you're not going anywhere. At the beginning of each class, one by one around the circle, the women set their intention for the ride.
I'm Jennifer. I'm leaving back my past.
I'm Alethea, and I'm leaving behind depression.
I'm Kashima, and I'm leaving back stress.
I'm Sheik, and I'm leaving behind wrongful mistakes.
On average, the women at Riverside gained about 30 pounds in just a year. The weight gain for men was closer to 2 pounds. Bruce Herdman, the prison's chief of medical operations, says weight gain is a problem, but it's not the most urgent problem.
The chlamydia rate, 6.6% on admission. We'll treat 1,000 people this year for HIV. The hepatitis C rate here, largely because of intravenous drug use, is 13%. So then you have hypertension, diabetes, all the regular things.
The prison is working on the women's weight issue. But first, the medical team had to challenge some conventional wisdom. Some staffers thought weight gain was a good thing.
Not clinicians, but security, that drug-addicted women and men were coming in, they were emaciated, and they needed to gain 30 pounds or 40 pounds. And, you know, we just had to disprove that.
The big change was the food. Portion sizes are smaller now. Last year, the prison cut calories from nearly 2,900 a day to 2,500 calories, and that's for men and women. That helped, but prison meals aren't the only food that's around. A favorite do-it-yourself dinner is called Chi-Chi's.
Oh, Lord. It's where you mix ramen noodles with cheese puffs. You put them in hot water, you put the meat inside, you can do honey mustard sauce or ranch on top, and you just put it in a potato chip bag and you mix it up. It's actually pretty good.
Amanda Cortez has been in prison for 5 years and eating like that for most of that time. She says food is a way to fight boredom and depression.
Some people get like 2 or 3 trays, so they get fat like that. And then a lot of people I notice eat a lot of bread. Like people take whole loaves of bread to their room.
So Cortez spends to keep the weight off. And on visiting day, her 10-year-old noticed.
When he first seen me, he was like, Mommy, you got skinny. So I was excited. No, I don't want your number. I don't want to get...
During a year with 3 spin classes a week, Cortez dropped 90 pounds. At the end of class, before the goodbyes and the sweaty hugs, there's a last ritual. The women don't even talk about losing weight. Instead, they talk about what they've gained.
I'm Sharina, and I'm bringing sexy bake.
I'm Jean, and I'm bringing back my bikini.
Okay.
I'm Ruth, and I'm bringing back faith and confidence.
I'm Erica, and I'm bringing back a real sense of, like, teamwork, you guys. Yeah. Like, it was really cool. That was such a good atmosphere. Yeah. And so much joy. So thanks for that, you guys.
Tanya English reporting from the Riverside Correctional Facility in Philadelphia. And the medical director she interviewed mentioned that weight gain, serious as it is, pales in comparison with some of the other health issues they are dealing with there. For example, mental illness. That's something correctional facilities across the country are struggling with. And joining us now to talk more about this issue is John Snook. He's the executive director of the Treatment Advocacy Center. His organization has published several research papers on this issue. And for example, they have found that now about 1 in 5 inmates has a serious mental illness like schizophrenia. John, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
If about 20% of inmates have a severe mental illness, what does that mean? Put that into perspective for us.
Well, what we're talking about is if you are in a prison facility, you are most likely every day to have contact with someone whose illness is so bad that they are going to be acting out. They are going to be struggling with treatment. They're really going to be in basically the worst situation you would see them in.
Are those inmates getting treatment in prison?
I think what we're finding is that jails and prisons are really trying to do their best. But if you take a step back and think about it, it's just not a situation designed to care for someone who has an illness that causes them to either act out, not be able to understand commands, or to be in a situation where there are individuals that may want to victimize or harm them. If we were thinking about it and we said, what's the worst place we could treat someone who has a severe mental illness? It'd be a jail or a prison.
And do mentally ill inmates get worse while in prison?
I think the evidence is pretty clear that that is very common, unfortunately. We're getting to a point that there are so many mentally ill individuals that we're starting to see jails and prisons take the step of sort of making themselves look more like a mental health facility or have a large segment that is a mental health facility. I think Cook County Jail is a great example of this. The new executive there, Dr. Nika Jones, is a clinical psychiatrist by trade, and she's now head of one of the largest jails in the country.
There's been a big effort by mental health advocacy groups to reduce the use of isolation for inmates with severe mental illnesses. Where does that effort stand?
I think there's been a lot of success. I think at the end of the day, this is one of those situations where jails and prisons are really trying to figure out what they can do differently. And this was an attempt at both protecting the individual and helping the prison just function normally. having a person with a severe mental illness be in solitary is hell within a hell. It's the most likely situation to cause them to have symptom severity increasing, to be unable to really participate in any sort of reform, getting better. And at the end of the day, they're much more likely to have some of the really scary consequences that we worry about, things like attempting suicide, when they're in a solitary confinement area for a significant amount of time.
What do you think needs to happen to reduce the number of mentally ill people in prisons and perhaps in turn affect mass incarceration in general?
What you need is for people who have a severe mental illness to never end up in a jail in the first place. Mental illness should be treated like any other illness, and when someone is struggling, they should receive medical care. Unfortunately, we've moved too far away from that, and too often it's a decision of, is this person dangerous or not? And obviously, that makes no sense when you're talking about an illness.
Is there any movement into the direction of treatment instead of incarceration?
So I've been really pleased at the landmark change that we've seen in probably even the last year or 2 years. I actually just came from a meeting where Senator John Cornyn's staff were talking about a very significant piece of mental health criminal justice reform. At the same time, Congressman Tim Murphy and Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson, a bipartisan group in the House, have really taken steps to enact what would be landmark mental health reform legislation. And that's really focused on the other side, on saying we shouldn't have to worry about criminal justice reform because we should never have the mentally ill end up in a jail or a prison in the first place. And I'm really optimistic about just how much that bill has galvanized the Congress to really take a second look at what we're doing for those who have a severe mental illness.
John, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.